I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast where we talk about what it's like to be sick. This week's guest is Whitney. She has Lee Fromenes syndrome. Let's talk about it.
Join the clap club. 3, 2, 1. Bingo.
Yeah. I feel like the clap club is a bad thing in other places.
Yeah, I mean, there's only two clap clubs, and there's one that you definitely don't want to be a part of.
What a great start.
I think that is a good place to start. This has nothing to do with the clap. Actually, we're going to be talking about something that you know, the clap is typically surrounds the world of sex and sexuality. And although that is not the road we're going down, we're going down the booby road. Boobies are sometimes involved in the world of sex, but today we're talking about boobies from the perspective of breast cancer. But Whitney, there's also something else that we're talking about, and this is the first time I've ever heard this word ever. Please correct my pronunciation. Lee Fromenes syndrome?
That's close.
Oh.
So well, close.
Can I try again?
Sure.
Lie Fromenes syndrome?
Warmer.
Oh, ooh. Jesus. Okay. You lie you from many.
Lee
from Lie from New York. It's Saturday night.
Lee Fromenes syndrome.
Lee Fromenes syndrome. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, is Lee Fromenes syndrome and breast cancer directly related, or are they two separate things? And we're going to talk about two separate things today.
Two separate things.
All right. All right. Well, where should we start, Whitney?
Well, y'all want to start with boobs, or do y'all want to start with genetics?
Let's get the boring genetic stuff.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Can you imagine if that was like if that was the first word that the first statement that you heard from a perspective, like a potential partner, like, all right, would you like to start with boobs
or genetics,
or shall we start with genetics?
Honestly, I talk about boobs a lot. That's kind of become my job per se. So I really have to clarify, you know, what do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about my boobs again, or do you want to talk about this? So, we can talk about the boring stuff first.
let's get warmed up before we go straight for the boobs. What are we talking about in terms of genetics?
Yeah. So Lee Fromenes syndrome is a genetic disorder that I found out about after getting diagnosed at age 30 for breast cancer. My medical team was like, why in the world is this 30-year-old woman coming up in here with stage 3 breast cancer? Like, how did she get that? We don't see any markers in her family. We need to do genetic testing. So when I did genetic testing, after I started to do treatment, I just assumed that I had like the BRCA1, BRCA2. Those are kind of like the most popular ones that you can have. But it turns out I have this condition called Lee Fromenes, which, by the way, I have to literally Google it every other time I write about it, have to spell it, just because it's just so difficult. And it's just a weird, it's named after the two doctors that found it. So that's why it has that funky name. But
Dr. Lee and Dr. Fromenes?
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
No, actually, one guy's Dr. Lee Fromenes, and the other guy's Dr. Meany. They just decided to like mix it up like that.
Split it up a bit differently. Yeah, totally. Cool.
They were quirky.
when you say BRCA1 and BRCA2, is that like the common genetic characteristic or a common genetic marker for like a breast cancer, or yes. So that's what you thought would come up initially, but then this Lee Fermini, I'll never say it right.
Lee Fermini, yeah.
Lee Fermini.
Yeah. Air foul line.
Marker came up instead. Is that what you're saying there?
Yeah, correct. Okay. Yeah. So when I found that out, a part of me was a little bit relieved that it wasn't either the BRCA 1, BRCA 2, because that's all I heard about. Mm. All of the posters in the gyno office at the girl doctor, that's all the information that they had was just those two markers. And so I was like, okay, well, I don't want any of those because that's what I see all the time. This Lee Fermini thing sounds pretty manageable. Let's do that. Well, come to find out, that's not what I would want. That's not what anyone would want. It's extremely rare genetic disorder, 1 in 5,000 to 1 in 20,000 families are documented to have this. So it's very, very rare. They're, you know, getting more and more cases every year just because people are doing genetic testing as a part of treatment, which is great.
Yeah. And it's become so much more prevalent. I mean, as a consumer product for people to be doing genetic testing.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. It's really interesting because I did a genetic testing thing, like just out of curiosity. And when I got the, like, you're clicking through to like make the payment and order the test kit and so on, and you get these sort of like disclaimers that come up, and they're like, hey, not to scare you or anything, but like, are you sure you really want to do this? Because you could potentially find out something that might ruin your life. Basically,
it's like that's the sentiment of it.
Yeah, right?
It's like because the Pandora's box question. It's like, are you sure you want to open this?
Yeah, and for me, my interest was my mom's adopted, and I have an identical twin brother. So by nature of doing the genetic test, we could just basically get 50% off because we just split it because we only needed to test one of our DNA and just be like, hey, it's a shared test now. So I was really interested, like from a curiosity perspective, to get my results. But when I started reading this stuff, I was like, whoa, you could actually learn something that would actually like could potentially scare the shit out of you and change the way that you look at the rest of your life.
We've had people apply to the show who had found out that they are basically going, like, guaranteed to get Huntington's disease because of their genetic testing, which is like, you know. It's funny because, like, on one hand, you can argue, like, hey, that's a good thing to find out. It's a good thing to know ahead of time. But on the other hand, it's like ignorance is bliss sometimes, and maybe it's not so great to find out. Whitney, when you get this diagnosis of like, would it be a diagnosis of Lee Fermini or when you get the diagnosis, like what's going through your head? Like, are you, obviously you have no fucking clue what that means. I mean, I don't want to assume that you didn't know, but I'm just assuming like you and most other people are like, I don't know what that means. What was going through your head? Like when you got that diagnosis?
So when I got it, I had no idea what it meant, what it's going to mean for my life, future, any of that until probably I'd say 6 months to a year later. Now, everyone around me knew what was going on, especially my husband. He was more ahead of the game than I was. I was in treatment mode. I was in, all right, let's get this shit out of my body. Let's keep it moving kind of deal.
Cause you're focusing on the cancer. You're going, fuck Lee Fermini. I've got breast cancer. Like I want to, right.
Yeah. So I'm like, let me just do that. I can do that. I can focus on that. And meanwhile, my family was getting more and more educated about what Lee Fermini means, where it came from. You know, we started doing some digging, you know, doing ancestry.com and trying to hunt for, you know, how did I get this? Where did it come from? And all of those things. And it just took me a while to really understand, oh God, my life is going to be different. It's not going to be what I thought it was going to be. It's going to be different. So when I went through that process, you know, that was of course depressing and like, you know, what am I going to do now? Or what's this going to look like? You know, I married when I found out I had breast cancer. This was 6 weeks after I'd just gotten married.
Whoa. Oh God. Wow.
Wow.
So poor dude, like, you know, he's thinking that, you know, we're going to live happily ever after, which we are. But, you know, at the time you don't expect to hear that your new wife has this issue. And now we have to go through breast cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just like a ton of uncertainty, obviously being brought up like immediately.
Did you get to go on your honeymoon before or?
No.
Fuck.
Oh no.
Listen, so we got married on New Year's Eve of 2016, and we had planned this huge Europe trip to go on that summer. So when literally after I hung up the phone with my doctor, after she told me, "Hey, Miss O'Connor, hate to be the one to tell you this, but you know, you have breast cancer." I hang up and I'm like, shit, I got to tell my family, my new husband, and we're not going to go on our damn honeymoon. Like that was like the third thing that I was so mad because we, you know, had spent all this time planning it and we saved a lot of money over 2 years to go on the trip. So we had to cancel it, but we ended up going on it the following summer. So it was fine. Oh, but, yeah, so it was just, it was a really big, punch in the gut.
Yeah. So well, what is Lee Fermini? What does Lee Fermini syndrome mean? And what is the implication? What is the implication for your life, sure, and for your health?
Sure, sure. So our cells have two jobs. The first job of our cells is to be the best cell it can be, right? So our hair cells be hair cells, our skin cells be skin cells, our, you know, stomach cells be stomach cells. They're trying to be the best cells that they can. That's their first job. Well, we get new cells every couple of years. So the second job is for these cells to replicate themselves. They have to make copies of themselves. So if you can imagine each cell having its own copy machine and they're making copies, well, sometimes the copy machine goes crazy and it makes poor copies, or maybe there's a jam in the copy machine.
I hate that.
I know.
It's the worst.
And so the copy machine is making all these bad copies. Well, your TP53 gene is your copy repair man or woman that comes in and looks at all these bad copies and says, "Ooh, that's a bad cell. That's out of here. That's an abnormal cell. That's out of here." It's like a screening process that the cells go through. Well, my TP53 gene, who I like to call Karen, is a bitch, and I explain it to people like she's either drunk or she's out to lunch. Like she's not doing her job. This.
Typical Karen activities, yes.
Exactly. Like she's either drunk or out to lunch, and she's not monitoring the copies that my cells are making. So that causes bad cells to continue to live in my body, and then they make cancer. And so it usually surfaces in soft tissue sarcomas, blood cancers, any cells that are fast growing, and breast cancer, or breast cells rather, are soft tissue sarcomas. So yeah, that's how it works.
So I don't want to get too far ahead of the story here, but like, it sounds like you're the type of person who, you know, you go through treatment, everything looks good, you come out on the other end, like, quote unquote, cancer free, and very likely in a short period of time, whatever that period of time may be, you're likely going to be getting cancer again.
Correct. So the probability of people who have Lee Fermini to get cancer again and again is really high.
Fuck.
It's much higher than a normal person. So I was diagnosed in 2017, 6 weeks after I got married, 1 week after I turned 30. And I was already stage 3 when we found out. It already started to go in my lymph nodes.
Is that because it's just like Karen's just off fucking off and drinking a bottle of vodka, and it's just replicating so fast that like by the time that you catch it, it's like, ah, fuck, it's already staged. Like, is that why? Because the Leiformini is causing it to replicate so quickly that the cancer is already so bad?
It's part of it, and also the type of cancer. So I had HER2 positive. So it all has to do with my hormones too. So there's just it's a multifaceted issue. Mm. And the hormones were feeding the cancer and, you know, making it live and replicate. And so there's just all these systems that are just they're all drunk.
Taylor, were you going to stay on that point? Because I wanted to kind of like rewind a little bit, because it's sounding like Lee Fermini has obviously like long-term consequences, and it's sort of like the thing that I think we're going to get to talking to more, but the breast cancer now seems like sort of where things all began. And I'm curious to sort of go back to that time, like shortly after your wedding, when you go to see the doctor, like did you do a self-exam and feel a lump, or what was it that sort of, did you have any inclination that you might have something going wrong with your boobs at the time?
Well, so I went for my annual in January. So every year, you know, you go for your annual to the girl doctor and he checks you out. The thing about me is I've always had lumpy boobs. And so it's hard to tell what is what sometimes. And so
What does that mean? Lumpy boobs? I don't think I've ever heard that. I don't think I have. Do you mean like lumps? Like when you if you self-examined, you feel
like thicker tissue or like sure. more firm.
I get that.
Areas.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I think I have lumpy balls. to be fully honest with you, I actually do. But anyway, that's neither here nor
we
there.
We can confirm later.
Yeah, we'll confirm later. Sorry. So yeah, I've never heard that before. Lumpy boobs. So you typically like always are kind of like it could be, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's fibroids that happen that, you know, different cysts that women have. Right. That's why a lot of times you guys, I honestly don't know the statistic on this, but a lot of times, partners will find the lumps in their partner's breast because, you know, during intimacy time and all that.
Playing around and stuff.
Yeah. Playing around and they are like, wait, what's that? And hey, you need to go get that checked. So you have to have a baseline, and that's why it's really good to do self breast exams every month so that you can be familiar with your boobies. Right. So went in and he was feeling around and he was like, you know, this kind of feels odd. You know, I'm not sure that the insurance company is going to let you have a mammogram or pay for a mammogram rather, because usually they don't pay for them until you're over 40. Yeah, which is total BS, but
and that's because of like the likelihood, like it's just it's way less likely for breast cancer to develop in people under 40.
Right. Right. And so,
and you don't know that you have a Leiformini at this point because there's been no, right. Okay.
Man, yeah. I know that the insurance company probably does the math on that stuff and like figures what's the most economical thing for them to do, but it just seems like, it seems like to me that a mammogram would be cheaper than like finding out that somebody has breast cancer and having to go through all the treatments and everything after that. Not that it needs to be an economic thing anyway, but like,
it's hard for us to wrap our heads around. I mean, it's just more challenging for us to perceive anyway, because of the, like we have just such different healthcare systems that like our perception of like, well, insurance companies covering stuff is very hard.
We haven't said this, but Whitney, you are in Georgia, the beautiful state of Georgia in the United States, and of course the three of us up here in the great white north of Canada. So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's someone listening going like, what's Taylor talking about? But yeah, if you didn't fucking pick up on Whitney's accent.
Sorry, Whitney. So you were saying that the insurance company, the doctor was saying that the insurance company might not cover it.
Yeah. Yeah. He might not cover it, but we're going to try and all that. So I go in and I don't tell anyone that I have to go in. I don't tell my husband. I don't tell anybody. And so I go in to get a mammogram, and they do the mammogram, and after the mammogram, they put me in a different room than when I started. And I was like, what the hell? Why are you putting me in a different room? So then the doctor comes in, and he's like, you know, I really want to take a few more pictures. And I'm like, all right, great. So go back in there and get my boobs smashed again and take more pictures. And he comes back in slowly and was like, yeah, we're gonna have to do a biopsy on this because it's just not looking good. So yeah, let's go ahead and set that up. And I'm like, all right, great. So set that up. And I think it was probably like 3 or 4 days later, maybe a week later. I'm not really, it's all fuzzy at this point. But I remember the night before, I tell my husband that I have to go in to do a biopsy. And he's like, what? Excuse me? Mm-hmm. And I just have a hard time. I don't like worrying people. I want to know what the hell I'm dealing with before I start making everybody sad and everything. And so, you know, tell them about that, go in there for the biopsy and get the results back. And yeah, turns out that it was breast cancer. So fuck. Yeah.
When you, so my mom had bladder cancer, and you know, like I've had this conversation with her a couple times now, but like she doesn't really say much about like follow-up appointments or even the procedures that she was having during that time. And I didn't really ask that much. I say that because I want to take onus for that too. But it's hard because I understand that you don't want to like burden somebody else with the, you know, when you don't really know what's going on. But I'm curious if it like weighed on you at that time, like when the doctor said to you, you're going to have to come back for a biopsy and it's, you know, 4 days or a week or whatever. During that time, are you sort of carrying any weight knowing that you potentially have to go in for this? And like, do you think that your husband could tell that something was off at the time or was it just sort of something that you thought very pragmatically about and was like, hey, this is the next step and I'm not going to worry until I find out what's really going on too?
Yeah, the latter. Yeah, okay. I did not want to freak out until there was a reason to freak out. And quite honestly, y'all, I just turned 30. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? That's what I was thinking. Like, I'm relatively healthy. I mean, I do the right thing 80% of the time. So I'm like, how in the world, you know, could this happen? But I will say this, another reason why I didn't want to inform everybody just yet is we had lost my dad 2 years prior to a glioblastoma. And so we took care of him and we did the whole, you know, we did clinical trials. And if you guys don't know anything about glioblastomas, I mean, you're automatically in stage 4, you're automatically they hand you a hospice pamphlet when you're walking out the door. Right. And so, you know, for a year and a half, we were trying to, you know, care for him and do things with him and go on trips and things like that. And then when he passed away in 2015, that was just a really big, you know, eye-opening experience for all of us because he died at 56. And we just, that was very, very unexpected. And so here comes 2 years later and I'm getting all this stuff done. And when it turns out cancer, like, honestly, I had so much anxiety about telling them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much telling them, hey, guess what, guys, we have to do this whole cancer thing all over again. And now it's my turn. Wow. And it was just like, we just got done with this shit. Like just got done. So, that was another layer of why I kind of kept that information to myself.
I always, and I feel like that provides a lot of context to the situation because it's funny. We have these conversations on this podcast all the time with people who are diagnosed with different illnesses and diseases, and like that way that people interact with family members around that is such an interesting piece to me, because I've lived it personally in my life with my mom, and with you know, talking to Jared about the challenges that he's been through with his cystic fibrosis. And so it's, you know, like every situation is so unique, and people are comfortable, you know, sharing certain things in certain situations and not in others. And so, like, I think that that's the thing that I've taken away from all of these conversations so much is that, like, you know, you have to respect the unique situation, because it's different for everybody. And there's like no right way to do it. It's just whatever makes the most sense to you at the time. And,
right.
And I think that's, you're just doing the best that you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So you go through breast cancer. And I know that this is breast cancer number one. Mm-hmm. What's the treatment process? How do you get to the point of finding out that, like, hey, we've beat this, with quotation marks behind that?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. After 6 rounds of chemotherapy, and a double mastectomy, I did not do radiation. The reason why I didn't do radiation is because people with Leframini, it's not advised for them to do radiation, traditional radiation, because of damaging the cells around the thing that it's attacking.
Because Karen can't fix them.
Karen can't fix it.
Fuck.
And so I don't do radiation. I don't do that common third step that everyone does. So go through that process, then have to do targeted hormone therapy infusions every 3 weeks for a year. I then followed that up by a new drug that came out called Nerolynx, that makes you poop every day. Had to take those 6 pills every day. It's in the chemo drug family, but it's not so strong that you have to go into the hospital to receive it.
Mm-hmm. When you say it makes you poop every day, do you just mean like more than usual, or it just like you are guaranteed to have a bowel movement that day for sure?
Oh, for sure. It causes the main symptom of it is diarrhea.
Oh, fun.
So I never shared this publicly, but why not? I drove a lot for my job, and so I had to, you know, I always carried an extra set of clothes in the car just in case, because, you know, sometimes the mood hits you right and it's just like, oh great, where's the closest bathroom? I never had an accident. Oh, it was a dream come true, but never had an accident. But I did that medicine for a year. Mm-hmm. And that was, it just made you feel like shit. I mean, it was just, you know, it was whatever. So did that. And then I was done. So I finished that in August of, I think 2018. No, 2019. Finished that up. And then, take a couple months of a break, had no medicine, no treatment, none of that. And because I have Leframini, I have to have scans all the time. So I have to have MRIs and full body MRIs and brain, all that stuff. They have to do a lot of monitoring. Well, I go in for my scan in 2019, November 2019, and they see another spot behind my left breast.
Fuck.
So they call me, I'm at work. And, you know, when you get that number, I don't know if you guys are, I mean, if you know everyone that's been through this, that, you know, when the doctor calls you and it's unknown caller,
mm-hmm.
you look at it and you're like, shit, that's the doctor. And mm-hmm. if they're calling you, that doesn't mean it's good. Mm-hmm. So I answer it and she's like, yeah, we're seeing a spot. And I just start bawling, crying so mad, because I was just like, but I'm doing everything right. Like I'm doing all the things. I'm doing all the treatment. I'm taking all the pills. You know, I'm pooping. Like what?
I'm so
what
regular.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
why?
When they say that they see a spot behind the left breast, did you have the double mastectomy at that point? And like where would that be then?
It's definitely, it's behind and in the tissue that was left over. Okay. So it was behind the implant that they put in.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we're like, wow. Okay, great. We go in and they're like, yep, we're going to have to, I don't think that you need to do chemotherapy. I think that my doctor said at the time, I think that we can just do surgery and maybe some radiation, just a little bit, and keep it moving. Well, because I got cancer again in such a short period of time, and this is such a rare condition, my husband was very adamant about getting a second opinion. And we went to Sloan Memorial Kettering in New York, which is top, you know, cancer centers, along with the Mayo Clinic and MD Anderson and all those cats. So we go to visit them and they give us a completely different treatment plan. They're like, nope, you got to do chemo again. We're recommending that you do chemo again, surgery, and what's called proton therapy, which is like a targeted radiation, pretty much. So it doesn't do as much damage around the area as traditional radiation would. Mm-hmm. So go to New York. Well, then we decided that we're going to work with you, right? So I do chemo here in Augusta and do my surgery in Augusta, and then COVID hit.
Oh yeah.
Oh, so this is like right, this right. is like this is like kind of
earlier
current.
This year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. Fuck. Then COVID hits, and it just takes over New York. And so we're like, well, what are we going to do? Like, because there's only so many centers that have the proton beam therapy system in it. Like, it's a newer thing. Mm. And so there's only so many places that have it. And so we're scrambling, like, all right, well, where is a place that's not infested with COVID-19 that we can go to? And
Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Yes.
That's not the answer,
right?
Not anymore, but okay. No.
We don't have proton beams here, you guys.
Yeah. I don't even know what a proton is, man.
We have just the continuum transfunctioners that are but not
a proton's a proton beam is a laser.
Yeah. Yep. And so, well, we ended up going to Rochester, the Mayo Clinic in Rochester.
Fox Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
That was
Fox.
That was the Fox channel that we got as kids.
Yeah.
We got Rochester's channel.
And that's why we all say it Rochester, when
we would turn on Fox to watch Simpsons.
Yeah.
It would like go to commercial and they're like, up next on Fox Rochester.
Yeah, local Rochester news.
And I never knew where Rochester was for years. And
we're like, why are we getting this TV station? Where's Rochester?
Yeah.
Oh God, that's hilarious.
So there's our connection to Rochester.
That's a throwback right there.
Well, now I'm going to say it that way for the rest of my life.
You're welcome.
Oh yeah. So we ended up going there and we stayed there this summer for 7 weeks. And on July 10th, I was announced cancer free and came back and still doing targeted hormone therapy, still taking different medicines that I need to take. But for the most part, right now we're maintaining.
And that's where you are right now. That's pretty, it's funny because like I didn't have a timeline. And so when we were talking about this, I was thinking like, this is all very much kind of in the past, but I mean, you look like 28. So like it fucking makes sense. Yeah, no problem. But it makes sense. You know, it makes sense. It's like, I get it. Two things. The first thing is, considering all this is like current, I think this is a really good place to drop our question from Melanie, one of our longtime OG patrons who's been with us from like the day one.
Can I just say, while we're bringing up Mel on the podcast, I had the pleasure of,
jealous,
long story, when I was driving home from a canoe training camp from Florida, I was driving through the States and Mel has been a longtime patron, as Jeremy mentioned. And so I was going through Salem, Massachusetts, and that's where Mel lives. And
she's a witch.
The the pleasure of meeting up with her and having a beer, and it was the most delightful experience, and yeah. I am forever grateful for her support of the podcast and being able to meet up with her, because I hope that sometime we can bring the podcast to Massachusetts and do a live show there, because it's Salem's fucking amazing too. So
yeah, and Georgia.
Yeah, someday, I just wanted to say that, because
yeah, we don't want to leave
Mel
Georgia.
And you're listening, and we love
well,
you.
Well, here's a question from the OG patron herself: have you ever considered having children? And what are your thoughts on pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, if so?
So, yes, I have always wanted to be a mom. I always wanted to have tons of kids and do that whole song and dance. However, over the past couple of years, that has changed. Mm. And not that I don't like kids at all. I love kids. But when I say we, I'm talking about my husband and I, we feel like the cards that we were dealt are meant to play a different game, if that makes sense. And so we are not having, that's not on the table for us right now anymore. Right. And people are like, well, oh, you can adopt. And obviously we could adopt, you know, for sure.
Sure.
But we think it's unfair at this point to even consider doing the family thing when my health is kind of in this unstable place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, and I think that's very fair to like, because coming from a standpoint of being pretty close to some people who have wanted children, but have had a lot of challenges becoming pregnant. And the social pressure that, Like even in how you describe that, it's like when you say, yeah, you know what? Like, it's not like we've been dealt these cards and we're playing a different game now. People's initial inclination is to like find a workaround for you.
Yes.
Instead of just going like, hey, that's okay. That's not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's not. That there's not just one option, it's not that the only option is have kids or be unhappy or something like that. I just feel like there's a lot of social pressure in that way. And so, yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from in that regard.
I wanted to ask, like, in sort of like thinking about the future in that sense, with Lee Fermini, is there like probably a life expectancy isn't the right way to frame this, but like, do they say that like, hey, look, you know, given the fact that you have Lee Fermini, there's a high likelihood that you'll get cancer, and therefore, you know, you should consider, you know, what it would be like to have a shorter life expectancy or, you know, think about your own mortality a little bit more. Is there any sort of thoughts or ideas around that?
Yeah, so we kind of came up with those thoughts and ideas on our own, because quite honestly, y'all, we've educated our medical team about this condition more than they knew about it. I mean, this is a brief paragraph that they learned in their medical books going to medical school. Right. Like they're like, yeah, I think I heard about that. And so they've had to teach themselves more about this. Mm-hmm. Even when we went to Sloan Kettering in the Mayo Clinic, they were still, I mean, those were the top doctors, you know, in the country and some in the world. And they were learning. They're like, I've only had one or two patients that have had this issue. So we've had, you know, it's conversations like that are tough when it comes to treatment ideas. Like my husband and I have had to have some really, really serious, hey, which shark are we going to attack that's closest to the boat now? Like, which one? What are we going to do? One of the biggest realizations that I had, and I didn't have it until I started talking about it out loud, is we went to go see a financial advisor because we have some student debt. We, you know, wanted to start figuring out a budget and how we're going to live our life now and all those things. So we go see a financial advisor, and he comes, he's all excited, and he sits down at the table with us, and he's has his, you know, portfolio and his ideas and all this stuff. And he starts talking. He's like, yeah, by the time you're 60, you know, you can do this if you do these things and blah, blah, blah. And so after he does his spiel, I look at my husband and then I look at him. I said, well, here's the thing. I said, you know, based on what I have, because of the likelihood of me going through treatment again and again, you know, my life, I'm not planning for retirement right now. Like, I'm not looking at how to set up my life for when I'm 65. That's just not, a lot of people are doing that. We're not doing that because of this issue. And he was kind of perplexed and kind of looked at me sideways. And then my husband kind of piped up and was like, do you understand what she's saying? Do you get what's happening? And then he goes into explaining what Lefermini is and whatever. And he sat back in his chair and he was just like, oh, okay. So we're planning on like what we're doing in our 40s and 50s and early 60s. And I was like, yeah, we want to have some fun, but we want to do it responsibly. And that's why we're here. So, he had to go back to the drawing board and rethink his proposal, to us. And so when that happened, I was like, well, dang, yeah, no, that is how we have to, how we have to view this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because like that, I relate to that so much in the sense that I never handled it that way, but like, you know, like, so like to me, it's like, and you know, not to make this about me, but like it's odd to hear. You're the first person I've heard who's described trying to think about and approach your financial security and financial future in a responsible manner, but also in a way that is taking into consideration the fact that you might not live as long as you had anticipated. And it is possible to do that, but to do it in a way like, you know, to do it in a way that's like really, to approach it in a way where it makes sense and where it feels responsible, but also ensuring that you make the most out of the time you have. Whereas like in my case, I've always been like, retirement fund? What retirement fund? I'll never live long enough. And now, you know, now I'm like 32 and I'm going, oh, fuck, there's this new miracle drug. And if I get that drug, which I want, obviously, but also if I get it, I'm not going to be doing too good in my 50s. Like, what the fuck, man? I wasn't planning on this, you know? So it's like, there are ways to do this like smartly.
Also, I mean, this is something that from a financial perspective, not just people who like may or may not live shorter lives, but everybody. I mean, when you carry debt as an individual, that debt oftentimes it doesn't just get
carries over. Yeah, it doesn't go away.
It goes to somebody, and somebody becomes responsible for that. So
yeah, it's interesting because I was thinking about the banker in that situation and like how, you know, we all have these jobs where we sort of like live our lives sort of ignorantly bliss to the fact that other people are dealing with these like really fucking massive challenges. And like, you know, just to go in there and assume like, all right, here, just another client, like aiming to fucking put some money away for 30 years from now. Here we go. But
I wonder if he approached that, like, you know, if he sees that he comes in, he's like, all right, have I got the plan for you? And he puts out his elevator pitch and you guys are like, but I have cancer. And he goes, I'm wondering if he went, oh, fuck. Now I can't phone it in anymore. Or if he's that kind of worker where he's like, oh, amazing, a beautiful opportunity to like dig deeper into the job that I truly love to do. You know, like,
I hope it's that one. That would be wonderful.
It would be.
But it is crazy how like it could affect like it affects everybody in the work that you do, whether you think that like you have to deal with this, these things like this or not. So anyway, I just wanted to make that point.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
I wanted to ask you, Whitney, is there, and if you don't, this isn't necessarily pertaining to your exact, to your individual situation, but, with Lee Fermini, if, so in the way that it works, in the way that you are the cell, there's a genetic mutation that is not allowing you to, basically take care of the cells that will eventually become cancerous or mm-hmm. that can become cancerous. In somebody who doesn't have Lee Fermini and they develop cancer, which obviously there are millions of people that happens to, is sort of the same thing happening, but like almost like anecdotally, like it's only happening at that time. And then if you take care of it, it could then, Karen goes away. Mm-hmm. And that's that, and they might not develop cancer for the rest of their lives, or, you know, maybe they do, but it's like, you know, at a like way down the road. Whereas with Lee Fermini, it's like Karen's always Karen and she's always there fucking shit up.
So Karen doesn't show up probably for you until much later when you're, and then Karen gets old. And she's not, you know, able to repair your copy machine in your cells, and your copy machine gets old. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you're copying these cells over and over and over, then it's easier for abnormal cells to just do their thing. And so that's why, I mean, honestly, I thought that cancer was only prevalent in old people. Like, I mean, I've never met anyone my age that mm-hmm. had breast cancer. I struggled with trying to find a community that could support mm-hmm. me in that way. And so, yes, it's for you, your copy machine is just going to pretty much die out as you get older. Whereas mine, it just sucks right now.
Right. So, there from the beginning.
I want to jump on something you said there, which was like that you were shocked that you thought that cancer was just for old people and that you've never really met anyone your age who's been in the same scenario as you. And, you know, one of the great things about our show is that like we spend a lot of time speaking to people that have had similar situations to yourself. You know, we've had a lot of like young adult cancer survivors on the show. And for people who listen to the show, a lot and have heard those stories, to hear someone like you say that might seem a bit kind of weird to them, because it's like, well, that seems like there's a fucking lot of you, like they're all on sick point. but one of the
I was thinking the same thing, actually.
Seems kind of common from where we stand.
But the reality of it is that, you know, this really hit home for me in the work that I used to do for Athletes for Cancer, which is a not-for-profit that would run cancer camps for young adults that have survived cancer. And the common thread there with all of the people that we would bring to these camps is like, these people are coming from all over the United States, sometimes from Canada. They range in age from, you know, 18 to 39. And every single one of them would show up and be tossed into a group of like 20 individuals within their sort of respective age range. And all of them are overwhelmed with emotion because it's the first time that they've been in the same space as somebody yeah. who has been through something that they've been through, who is in the same age as them. And to hear, you know, to hear so many of their stories of people who go in for chemo treatment and they sit down in that, like in that chair and get hooked up to the chemo, and they look to the right and it's like this, you know, this like 80-year-old man, and they look to their left and it's this, you know, 69-year-old woman, and they're sitting there going, I'm 25. Like, what the fuck am I doing here?
Mm-hmm.
This, like, this doesn't compute. This doesn't add up. And so for, you know, for a lot of people who go through cancer, I mean, you know, this is the same with Brandon, you know, I mean, like, you name the guests that we've had, a lot of those people feel so isolated in that experience, because it is not that common, even though it might seem like that by subscribing and listening to the show. And so, and there's, I mean, then there's the whole like hostful of mental health implications that come with that, of those feelings of isolation or feeling alone when you're going through something as dramatic and as serious as cancer. So,
were you able to find a community? What is there a particular place where that happened for you, or is it still kind of lacking in that sense?
So the first time I went through cancer, I honestly didn't reach out a whole lot to try to find a community. I got pamphlets in the mail for different support groups, like the Pink Pistols and the forgot what the other one was called, but one group was 45 and younger and the other group was 46 and older. And I never went to any of those. Not that I was avoiding going to a support group. I actually am a licensed mental health therapist too. So, you know, I love support groups. I'm a big supporter of them. But honestly, y'all, the first time around, I was so much in fight mode and I was in like, all right, we got to get this done. I got to survive this so that I can move on with my life, so that I can be a newlywed, so that my family doesn't have to worry about this crap anymore. Let's just keep it moving. Let's keep it moving. And I had so much support from my family, from my husband's family, from my friends. So in a sense, I had the support that I needed as far as emotional support. Now, as far as like realizations for what survivorship looks like now, and for what your body's going to look like now, and what you're going to feel like after cancer treatment, those kinds of things have been a huge, huge, huge adjustment the second time around for me. My mental health was definitely tested the second time more than the first time. Just because of me adapting, my body looking different, me, you know, wondering why this has happened again, feeling different hormones all over the place, feeling crazy when you know you're not crazy, you know, and so it's just been the survivorship part has been interesting. And, you know, the community part is growing, through my business that I started, the Boobie Queen Company, which I know we'll talk about when we start talking about boobs. Well, we've talked about boobs, but you know, like boobs. But anyway, so, you know, figuring out that community and reaching out to people online and really learning about young breast cancer and talking to other women that are going through the same thing has just been so amazing and helpful. And that's why, you know, podcasts like this are so important, because you're providing education, but you're also providing a layer of support and feeling, making people feel like they're not alone. And it's just so important. And I know that you guys, you know, talk and interviewed people all the time. And so again, for you, it's, you know, you think that the support's already there, but it's not as much as we think it is. So
you know, you just touched on it there, but in everything that we've been sent from Lauren, who works tirelessly in the background to set up our interviews, your name in everything that's been sent to us, the call sheet, all that stuff, is just Whitney the Boobie Queen, and which I'm pretty sure we're just going to title this episode Whitney the Boobie Queen. Tell us what is Boobie Queen and how did it originate?
Yeah, well, So funny story about that is I've actually been nicknamed the Booby Queen since I was about 14 years old.
Cool.
So I hit puberty before everybody else. I had ginormous knockers before. I mean, in middle school, I was the girl wearing double sports bras, having to get like custom made dresses because my boobs were so big. And so, you know, none of my friends had that issue, but I did. And one day we were, or one weekend, we were on a girls' trip. I was 14. We were on a girls' trip. We went to the beach, and we were all getting ready to go to dinner, and had my clothes laid out on the bed. And one of my girlfriends walks by, and she picks up my bra, and she goes, "Oh, my God, Whitney, do you have to wear this?" And I was like, "Yeah, yeah, welcome to my world." She's like, "Oh, my God, you're like the queen of boobs." And so I took the bra, and at that moment I put it on my head and I just posed, and I was like, okay, booby queen. That seems right. Mm-hmm. And so ever since then, my friends nicknamed me the booby queen. They made me, you know, bra crowns and all that kind of stuff. And even when I got married on my bachelorette trip, they made like a bride booby crown for me and all that. And when I went on my very first breast cancer walk, I made booby crowns for all my friends and myself, and we just did our breast cancer walk. And I had so many people come up to me and they were like, "Oh my gosh, can I take my picture with you? This is amazing. This is so great. You look great." And I kept thinking, has no one done this before? Like, has no one put a bra on their head? Like, how am I?
I've done that.
Exactly. Like, how is this not a thing? I don't understand. And so as I went through treatment, I realized there was so many people, y'all, so many people in the treatment room at the doctor's office that they were doing this alone. They were talking to the doctor alone. They were hearing news alone. They were, you know, getting chemo alone. They were having to get rides for them to come and get them when they were done. I didn't have any of those issues. And so I was like, well, hell, I'm not the only booby queen out there. There's tons of booby queens. And so I was like, I wonder if I can start a business where I somehow sell and donate booby crowns, and I'll make them really pretty, and just remind women that they're a queen, just to help them through this process and make them laugh and, you know, make them smile or whatever. And so slowly but surely, I started this business, and it's a one for one. Like, you buy one for your loved one, and then I donate one. I donate to the hospital that I go to, the Mayo Clinic. I send them booby. They loved it up there. When I went up there, I sent it to them. And there's a lot of people online that I've come in contact with that have nonprofits, and I'll send them some crowns. And so it's just me for right now. It's very new. I've been doing it for about a year. The pandemic has kind of slowed things down for me, but I'm okay with that. I have big plans for the Booby Queen company for sure. I want to do all kinds of fun stuff, because I think it's important to not just have the attitude of, in the breast cancer world, I'm sure y'all have heard it, you know, you're a warrior, you know, you are fighting the good fight and all of that. And while a lot of that's true, there's a lot of booby queens that fought the good fight and still didn't make it, and they're not with us. And so Booby Queen is about embracing what is, because that's what I have to do. I have to embrace what is. Embrace what is, be a queen right now, be present, all that fun stuff, and figure out a way to celebrate through this BS of cancer. Through all the treatment, how can we figure out a way to celebrate? And I just choose to do that with underwear on my head.
That's really awesome.
I'm looking at the pictures right now on your website, and it's They're amazing. They're
look at this.
Oh, yeah, so awesome.
You know what I can't not think about is Little Nicky.
Yes. That's what that dude. I had that image in my head, and I was like, "Where is that image coming from?"
It's Little Nicky, and it's Kevin. It's Kevin Smith. Not Kevin Smith. Kevin Nealon.
Kevin Nealon, right?
I think it's Kevin Nealon's character. Yeah, he's like in hell, and he's basically portraying like the Bram Stoker's Dracula, with that hairpiece that big hairpiece that kind of looks like two lumps, but he's in hell and he actually just has two giant tits on his head and wears a bra. I'm gonna drop it in the chat so you guys.
It's very
see
very
it,
funny. I had that exact same image. I think that's so. I mean, in the way that, you know, we were just talking about community and, you know, like it is an incredible way of creating community and putting a spin on the experience of going through breast cancer that's just what individual ingenuity is all about, seeing something that is lacking and then like seeing a gap and then filling it with your creativity and creativity that comes with that. I think that's so cool.
Also the humor, just wearing a bra on your head. That's pretty funny too. Yeah. But the thing that I find is so wild is that you were the booby queen before.
Yeah.
You had breast cancer. Like was that like the irony? I imagine like telling your friends about it and being like, "Hey, the booby queen has breast cancer." Like what was that? Did everybody go, "What the fuck? Are you kidding me? That's crazy."
Yeah. When I told them I have four very best friends that we've known each other since elementary school. And, they're the ones that, they've been in my wedding and, you know, did the walk with me. They organized that walk for me, all that kind of stuff. So I had them on a group, phone call and told them all at once. And one of them cut me off when I was like, "I have breast cancer," and shut up, stop doing this, you know, just like, you know, the booby queen is kind of going to take a new meaning now, y'all. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And honestly, I mean, this may sound a little corny, but, it just feels right. Like it just feels like I feel like I'm coming a little full circle on this. I had a job, in a really great job, working at a mental health crisis stabilization facility, and quit that job in September during this damn pandemic. And I just really feel that, I don't know, I just think Booby Queen needs to take over the world. And so I have so much fun getting pictures from women that ring the bell and they have their crown on, or they're sick in bed and they have their crown on. They're like, "I hate life, but I love my crown," you know? And so that kind of stuff, like, I mean, honestly, I'd be happy to take a huge pay cut just to get those pictures. And I never thought that I'd think that way, but, honestly, it's been an interesting shift and it's been a really fun shift to do it. So
where can people find Booby Queen? Where can people follow along with everything that is Booby Queen?
Yeah. So you can go to boobycrowns.com. That's my website that I have the crown shop on there that you can order a booby crown. You can follow me on Instagram, Booby Queen Chronicles. And on Facebook, if you just go to the Booby Queen Company, you can check out the Facebook page. And follow all my shenanigans.
That's awesome. And if you're near a computer or have your phone that accesses the internet, come on, guys. Everybody does right now. You're probably listening to this podcast on that device right now. You should definitely go to boobycrowns.com and check out some of the pictures of these crowns, because they are incredible.
Thanks, man.
Whitney, before we wrap, I want to ask you a question, a two-part question that we ask a lot of our guests.
Sure.
The first part is, out of everything you've gone through, what would you say is the biggest thing that Lee Fromeni and breast cancer has taken away from you?
Ooh, taken away from me. It has taken away the traditional life that I thought that I was gonna have. Honestly, after getting married, I thought, okay, well, we're gonna do this and we're gonna have some kids and then we're gonna do this and I'm gonna have a good job and we're gonna do this, this, and this. And that's kind of what I grew up thinking, that that was what my life was gonna look like. So I had to do a little bit of grieving to realize that that is not the direction that it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But it did take, that narrative, I guess, away from me.
What would you say is the biggest thing that it's given you?
It has given me the excuse to celebrate a whole lot more. I think with when you have something like this, you know, people are always saying, you know, just stay positive and look for the silver lining and that kind of thing. Well, a lot of times there's not an obvious silver lining. There's just not. And so for me, creating your own silver lining, creating your own excuse to celebrate, even if it's having champagne on a Tuesday for no reason, do it. We're going to go get a Christmas tree later on today. And I already have a chilled champagne bottle ready to pop for when we get our Christmas tree, because we got a Christmas tree. Did I do that before? Not really. Didn't even think about it. But I would say that's the biggest thing that's given us, because it's made us celebrate a whole lot more.
Mm. Well, Whitney, I got to say, this has been an absolute pleasure to sit down and chat with you and to hear all things Booby Queen. And again, folks, take a moment out of your day today to go check out Booby Queen online. You will not regret it. Whitney, thank you so, so much. This has been really, really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank y'all. I appreciate what you do, and I appreciate the education that you provide. It's really, really important, and I didn't realize how important it was until it happened to me. And so thank you for just being support and making people laugh. God.
Hey, right back at you. Right back at
just,
you.
Just saying.
Thank you so much, Whitney.
Thanks, Whitney.
Thanks, Whitney.
Yep, appreciate it.
All right, folks, that is it, and that is all. Thank you for tuning in. As always, we are coming to you with new episodes every Monday and Friday for your Sick Boy Fix, and you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. But if you can't get enough, why not follow us over on Instagram or on Twitter, at Sick Boy Podcast? And why am I doing this all alone? Where did Brian and Jeremy go? That's okay. I mean, I'm obviously your favorite anyway, so you're welcome. If you have any questions, comments, or you'd like us to read anything on the show, like a cool story that you have for us, or if you want to apply, go to sickboypodcast.com/contact. That's if you want to apply to be on the show. And for those stories, you can send them to us directly at letters@sickboypodcast.com. Sick Boy is co-produced by Jeremy Saunders, Lauren Sankey, myself, Taylor McGilvery, and the lovely and affable Brian Stever. Our social media is run by the incredible Lauren Sankey, is managed by Jeff Lonas, the one and only, and sound design done by none other than Donovan the CPAP Morgan. Music is brought to you by both Rich O'Coin and Take Part. We love you, giving us our jams every week. Thank you, everybody, for listening once again, and we'll see you next time.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.